His Fordship Mustafa Mond. The eyes of the saluting students almost popped out of their heads. Mustafa Mond, the resident controller for Western Europe. One of the 10 world controllers. One of the 10. And he sat down on the bench with the DHC. He was going to stay. To stay, yes, and actually talk to them. Straight from the horse's mouth. Straight from the mouth of Ford himself. Two shrimp-brown children emerged from a neighbouring shrubbery, stared at them for a moment with large, astonished eyes, then returned to their amusements among the leaves.
"You all remember," said the controller in his strong, deep voice. "You all remember, I suppose, that beautiful and inspired saying of our Fords, history is bunk. History," he repeated slowly, "is bunk."
He waved his hand, and it was as though, with an invisible feather whisk, he had brushed away a little dust. And the dust was Harappa, was Ur of the Chaldees, some spiderwebs, and they were Thebes and Babylon and Knossos and Mycenae. Whisk, whisk. And where was Odysseus? Where was Job? Where was Jupiter and Gautama and Jesus? Whisk. And those specks of antique dirt called Athens and Rome, Jerusalem and the Middle Kingdom, all were gone. Whisk. The place where Italy had been was empty. Whisk, the cathedrals. Whisk, whisk, King Lear and the thoughts of Pascal. Whisk, passion. Whisk, requiem. Whisk, symphony. Whisk.
"Going to the Feelys this evening, Henry?" inquired the assistant predestinator. "I hear the new one of the Alhambra is first rate. There's a love scene on a bearskin rug. They say it's marvellous. Every hair of the bear reproduced. The most amazing tactual effects."
"That's why you're taught no history," the controller was saying. "But now the time has come."
The DHC looked at him nervously. There were those strange rumours of old forbidden books hidden in a safe in the controller's study. Bibles, poetry. Ford knew what. Mustafa Mond intercepted his anxious glance, and the corners of his red lips twitched ironically.
"It's all right, Director," he said in a tone of faint derision. "I won't corrupt them."
The DHC was overwhelmed with confusion. Those who feel themselves despised do well to look despising. The smile on Bernard Marx's face was contemptuous. Every hair on the bear, indeed.
"I shall make a point of going," said Henry Foster.
Mustafa Mond leaned forward, shook a finger at them.
"Just try to realize it," he said, and his voice sent a strange thrill quivering along their diaphragms. "Try to realize what it was like to have a viviparous mother."
That smutty word again, but none of them dreamed this time of smiling.
"Try to imagine what living with one's family meant."
They tried, but obviously without the smallest success.
"And do you know what a home was?"
They shook their heads. From her dim crimson cellar, Lenina Crown shot up 17 stories, turned to the right as she stepped out of the lift, walked down a long corridor, and, opening the door marked Girls' Dressing Room, plunged into a deafening chaos of arms and bosoms and underclothing. Torrents of hot water were splashing into or gurgling out of 100 baths. Rumbling and hissing, 80 vibro-vacuum massage machines were simultaneously kneading and sucking the firm and sunburnt flesh of 80 superb female specimens. Every one was talking at the top of her voice. A synthetic music machine was warbling out a super cornet solo.
"Penny?"
said Lennon Sedler to the young woman who had the pegs and locker necker next to her so down. But as the 2,000 worked in the bar cornet, and her sense as the 2,000 million inhabitants of the planet had only 10,000 names between them, the coincidence was not particularly surprising.
Lenina pulled at her zippers, downward on the jacket, downwards with a double-handed gesture at the two that held trousers, downwards again to loosen her undergarment. Still wearing her shoes and stockings, she walked off towards the bathrooms.